The Torah in Parshas Bahar tells us in the opening parak, parak Chaf Hei, Pasuk Lamed Vav, a very famous pasuk. It's interesting, and it's often not appreciated, that this famous pasuk with such great consequence actually occurs in the context of something much more pedestrian, if you will, namely Hilchos Rivus. But in the context of Hilchos Rivus and the fact that we have to be nice to people and can't oppress people, and we have money, we should lend it to them, but not burden them with high interest rates. So the Torah tells the Altikach mi'ito neshech v'tarbis, v'yareisa me'elokecha, v'chei achicha imach. Because what's the goal of this? That your achicha, your brother, should be able to live, should be successful, should be vibrant, should be sustained, imach, with you. Even though the context there is ribbis and not at all so sensational there, the Gemara and Bamitzia and the Afstamach Beids, I guess if you could say it, made this pasuk famous. Because the pasuk is at the heart of one of the world-famous machloksim in all of Shas. And one of the fascinating and consequential machloksim. The Gemara here talks about the very famous machlokas of Rabbi Akiva and Ben Keturah. The Gemara tells us the following case. There are two people, and they weren't stam on the derech. They were lost. They were in the desert. They had nothing to drink, nothing to eat. And one person had a canteen. If they'll both take a little sip of the drink, they're both going to die. There's not enough for either, for both of them. But if one of them will drink, he'll survive, because he'll be able to make it to the next town. But obviously the next person, the other one, is going to die. This is what they call, like in NCSY or creative education, lifeboat ethics. What do you do? Right? You have different people to save, only three life jackets. Who gets off the Titanic? Not simple questions. So the Gemara here says, this is a machlokas, famous machlokas, Darsh Ben Petura, Mutav Shishtu Shnehem V'yemusu, V'ayir Echamem V'yemisoso Shel Chavera. It's Chas V'Shalom, I should be involved in causing another person's death. Nebuch, we'll both die, but this way we'll at least act immorally. Comes along, Achebar Rabbi Kiva V'limed, V'chei Achich Imach, the pasuk from our parsha, Chayecha Kormen L'chayecha Vercha. That was fascinating, not at all obvious. The halacha, the psak, is, you know, reasonable, defendable. How do you get that from our pasuk? Just anyone, this is like a famous Gemara, you all know this already. How do you get that limud from our pasuk? You should live, he should live, therefore your life comes before his.
With you.
Just say that.
With you, it's...
I'm not saying it's the bomb kasha. It's a necessary question.
His life is only with you.
Oh, good. So the Rush and others, Ayin Sham, the Rush, perhaps, and others after him, point out this idea. That the way, again, it's interesting that the Gemara never specified, but in this catastrophic case of either two people are going to die or one person will live and see his friend Nebuch die, the Kiva Paskins, your life comes before his. If you have the canteen in your hands, you drink it, Nebuch will die. Why? Because the Pasuk in our parsha says, you're supposed to make sure that your friend can live, but only when it will be with you, not at your expense. And therefore, if it means him surviving at your expense, that's Rabbi Kiva's famous psak, you don't have to save him. So this is our connection to Parshas Bahar, v'chei achicha imach. However, what is the implication of that Gemara? If you were in a situation in which saving him would not be at your own expense, would you be obligated to save him? Presumably the answer is yes. This implication is actually spelled out very explicitly and forcefully by a different Gemara, the Gemara in Masechas Sanhedrin and Daf Ayin Gimel. There the Gemara tells us about the case of somebody, you see somebody is drowning in the ocean, there's a lion that's running after him, and you can save him. You have a chiyuv to save him, and without doing so, you'd be in violation of, what's the law of Doraisa? Lo sa'amod al dam re'echa, you can't stand idly by and see your friend's blood shed. This halacha, this chiyuv to save people when you have such an opportunity, is codified by Rishonim. Just read you the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch quotes this Rambam and others. The Rambam is in Hilchos Nesicha. Perek Aleph. There we go. Halacha Yadala. The Rambam tells us, Kol Yochol Lahatzil. Anyone who could save their friend below Hitzil and doesn't do it, over Al Osamar Al Damriecha. For example, Haroes Chavero Tovea Bayam, Olistim Boim Alav. He's being attacked, he's being mugged. in Central Park, or Chaya Ra, Ba, Love, Yachal Hatzilo, Hu, Ba'atzmo, either he can do it himself. Oshi Yiskar Acherim Latzilo, he's not a strong guy, but he knows some strong guys. So he'll hire the neighborhood guys instead of causing trouble for the same money. Why don't you go do a favor and beat up the other bad guy?
Would you have to take more than one tip?
So that is a fascinating question. Very good. Louis, very good question. That's not the topic of my shiur.
It's the
chore. Very good. Very good. By the way, Yishpech, by the way, Louis, for two things. One is your question. The first is you reminded me. Chatzos Yavisi Pashati. Thank you to our sponsor. Alan Tagan. Alan, you know the school is. If you sponsor, you ask really good questions. So Yishpech for the sponsor, the Shama should have an Aliyah. Louis, who Kilo sponsored, and therefore he asked a very good question. So that is a discussion I discussed in Parshas Vayetze when we had the shir on the topic of Hamavazdei, the Ayavazdei, Yosar Michomish. The general idea that for mitzvos you don't have to spend more than a certain percentage of your income, so not all of it. And the last part of that shir, when we were running late, and I was cramming in a lot in 1 minute, I mentioned there's a big discussion in Achronim about that question. I wasn't even thinking about it, but today, as part of my research for this shir, just like you were thinking about it, Louis, so are some of the other Sfarim, and they mentioned this in context. It's a different question, but in light of this Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch Pasan's way, it is discussed. Just as the Chazara, there is the Chavetz Chaim in Sefer Avos Chesed writes explicitly that Hamavazdei should not apply to Sakanas Nefashos. When it comes to saving another person's life, you should have to give up all of your money if that could save a person's life. Now, what complicates things is, why is it all on me? Even the whole community should have to pay. Why just me? And even if you'll pay anything, one penny, let alone all of your money, assuming that the person survives and can afford it, they owe you the money back. It's not supposed to be forever. If they can't pay it, then maybe you can go to the community and pay you back. But the idea is that maybe you'll have to give up a little bit of your own money in fact. But whether you have to go all the way, Rav Wozner has a tshuva, there's this Chavetz Chaim, there's a big, big literature on that question. I only did it in part. I haven't yet ever given a shir directly about it, because it's sort of related to tonight's topic, and it was an afterthought of the Mavazvei shir. So maybe one day, whether it'll be next year Parshas Bahar, next year Parshas Vayetze, or we'll come up with another creative way to connect it to a different Parsha, maybe we'll discuss that question more. Right, maybe opinion Shmuel, right? The famous Rav Huttner story, where Yaakov Kamenetsky said not to. Right, I don't think there's any personal between the two of them. Right, the Rambam and Rambam, the difference, Rambam and Rambam said, don't save me. I think Rav Huttner would have been happy to be saved, but Rav Yaakov said, don't do it. But that's for another time. Okay. Getting back to our topic, so the Rambam paskins, again, the Shulchan Aruch paskins this way, you're not supposed to stand idly by, and if you do so, you'd be in violation of Lo Samod Al Dam Re'echa. So now the question is, with these two building blocks, we're now ready for our real topic. Our real topic is, so you don't have to die in order to save your friend's life. That's Rabbi Kiva's psak. On the other hand, if it will be, in theory, no skin off your back, you're absolutely obligated to trust everything you can to save a person's life. What about something in the middle? What about risking your life? Safek b'kulat nefesh to save another person. And there are a variety of scenarios that could be called safek. Any die, you can walk down the street and get hit by a car, okay. But the truth is, not only do we not live that way, halacha doesn't think that way. Halacha, in many, many ways, is profoundly normal. It's one of Judaism's great chidushim. Human beings are allowed to be normal. They're supposed to become great, but still normal people. And halacha looks at things, whether it's about danger, in a lot of ways, with normality. So in the normal course of events, and here we'll get to a little bit the issue of doctors and trusting them, but for the most part, based on what is commonly accepted, what the doctors are assuring you in one way or the other, you know this person is going to die. It is some risk to you, but if you'll do it, you could save them. Some risk doesn't mean it'll just hurt. It means it may, at best case scenario, it will just hurt. Worst case, you could die from it. You could die from it. Are you obligated? Which is obviously question number one. And question number two is, even if you're not obligated, are you allowed? That is our topic. Exactly.
Why would it be any different? There's all kinds of cases where it's fasting, let's say, Yom Kippur, will possibly kill somebody. So that's considered, that subject to what method is considered the equivalent of a body loss. We don't say fasting.
Who said? No, we say suffix is docha the halacha. Not that it's equivalent to vada. It's still only a suffix, but in certain cases, suffix wins. Suffix beats a chashavas.
So why
suffix beats a chashavas, fasting and Yom Kippur.
So why wouldn't the same suffix over here win? As with any other halacha. I wouldn't think it's not the point.
Because it's not an equivalent case. Because the question is, do I have an obligation to risk my life? In Hilchos Yom Kippur, I don't have to. You're not thinking about it right.
But still, I don't have to because it's still b'chayda.
Because Safek B'kulach Nefesh beats out Hilchos Yom Kippur. The question we're asking is, does my Safek B'kulach Nefesh beat out L'sam Adam Re'echa? It's a different question.
It's like any other mitzvah. It's not one to give him a beris chamuris. I'm not killing him.
Myself. Oh, but maybe no. It's not so simple. Of course, this is much. Now we're not just talking about whether a Shabbos will be kept. We're talking about a potential loss of life, which I have a way of stopping. Again, we're not talking about Vade. We're only talking about something.
No, yes, even if it's something.
Again, but it's pushing life. It's a different thing. One is, can I? If I'm worried, maybe I'll die, so I shouldn't fast. That's not the same thing as saying either A, maybe I'm obligated to save someone's life, because saving someone's life is more important than Yom Kippur. So maybe I have to make the risk, even though I don't have to make the risk for Yom Kippur. And number two is maybe I'll be allowed, which it happens to be a question anyway about Yom Kippur too. Is someone allowed to fast when they're not obligated? But again, I don't think they're connected, because the premise of the question is, and there's ample halakhic basis for this, is that saving someone's life is more important than Shabbos, is more important than Yom Kippur. So you can't necessarily assume because of one, the other. It may be that some poskim will, but you can't necessarily automatically assume, yeah. If we'll say that, then we'll have to figure out how to do it with the Gemara. Yes. So we'll have to say some. That's why I started with the Gemara. You agree with my pedagogic choice? Okay. That Gemara is the set at the table. Ein hachinam, ein hachinari. So where this starts, which is one way of basically responding to both of your comments, which is l'chora you shouldn't be obligated and maybe even not allowed. So why are we even having such a discussion about the possibility of you being obligated? Maybe the only question should be, are you even allowed? Which we'll get to anyway. But the reason it all starts from is a comment of the Kesef Mishnah on this very Rambam. The Kesef Mishnah quotes the Haggadot Maimonios. Now you'll say, for those of you who are familiar with the typical page of a Gemara, of a Rambam, if he's quoting the Haggadot Maimonios, why am I quoting the Kesef Mishnah? The Haggadot Maimonios is also on the page. So the reason is, because if you look in the Haggadot Maimonios on the page, this comment does not exist. Who wrote the Kesef Mishnah? Joseph Caro, who also wrote a Sakhna Shulchan Aruch, that's too easy. He wrote the, what was his magnum opus? Not the Shulchan Aruch, in his own mind at least. So if you look in the Beit Yosef in Choshen Mishpat, Simon Tov, Chavav 426, the Beit Yosef there also quotes this same Haggadot Maimonios, which in most standard printings of Haggadot Maimonios does not exist. As it so happens, if you have the Frankel Rambam, in the back of the Frankel, one of the many bells and whistles that they include are Haggadot Maimonios Constantina. It's a particular version of the Haggadot Maimonios, a particular text that we have, which they included here. And if you'll take a look in the Haggadot Maimonios of the Constantine version, they have this. He didn't make it up. For whatever reason, I don't know the history, I'm not an academic. Let's call back Rabbi Schachter for that. It got lost. It was in some defusim, it wasn't in others, but you look at Frankel, it tells you. And in fact, if you have the Frankel one, even in the Kesef Mishnah, it writes in parentheses, defus Constantine. But that's really cheating because it wouldn't be in any other Kesef Mishnah. What does the Haggadot Maimonios, with all of that big introduction, so what does he say? Nothing on his own. He just quotes a Yerushalmi. He doesn't tell you where the Yerushalmi is even. A lot of the homework we have to do on our own. Says the Haggadot Maimonios from this text, over alo samod v'chulu, that's what the Rambam said, if you don't save somebody, you could. But Yerushalmi masik, it's a one-liner. In the Yerushalmi, it concludes, afilu lahach nesatzmo v'safek sakana chayif. Even if it means you have to put yourself in some danger, potentially loss of life, you are obligated to risk your own life to save somebody else. So we didn't know where the Haggadot Maimonios was, and we didn't know where the Yerushalmi was. So if you look in the Devos Constantine, at least you get one place. You know where the Haggadot Maimonios exists. But even in the Devos Constantine, he doesn't tell you what Yerushalmi is. So we still have a little bit more homework to do. Sherlock Holmes is still working. Yes. Yes. Yeah, we're not talking about Vaday. No one holds that you Vaday. In fact, Vaday might be Usr. It's certainly not going to be obligated. The question is, of Suffolk, maybe I have to do it. That is what the Yerushalmi says, according to this. As I remember, Sam is a bigger bucky in names of these kind of things than I do. So you remember there was a running back from our youth. I was an all-star, an all-pro, who died like after 1 or 2 years, and it was just Ramish in the beginning. He made Khorfo. Why? Because he was a tzaddik. He was driving down somewhere, I think it was in Louisiana or Alabama or something, and he sees that mamish, there's mamish someone, Tavo Benahar, he sees a kid who was drowning in the sea, in the creek. And he jumped in and he saved the girl and he drowned. These things, I remember that because it was a dramatic moment. But the truth is, these things, I don't know if they happen every year, they happen, unfortunately, more than that one time. So Shaila is, was he obligated to do it? I'm almost just a kid, I was in the fall from this. What a story, what a hero. So was he obligated? So says Agos Amunios, yes. You're chayek to put yourself in suffering danger in order to save somebody's life. Now the question is, where did you get it from? Because the questions that were asked before, that's not what the Gemara would imply. We have other examples where we don't say you have to do that. So the Achronim work hard to try to figure out which Yerushalmi this is. You have to real bukkis in Yerushalmi to be able to figure such a thing out. Baruch Hashem, there are those who do. So for example, the most likely scenario, the real, it seems to be the main source, is something that a number of Achronim knows, notably like the Netziv, in his commentary on the Shiltos, and the Ham Ek Shela, the Netziv digs up the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is a Maseches Trumos in Perches, and describes a fascinating story. There was a particular Amora who was in danger. He was in jail, and it was like he was about to get killed. And there's one Tana, I think it was Rabbi Yochanan, who said, you know, we'll daven for you, but I'm out of here. You know, what are we going to do? Because if I'll come and try to rescue you, they're going to kill me. And Reish Lakish there in the Yerushalmi says, I will go and do anything I can to save him, even if they'll kill me. Even if they'll kill me. Now, it doesn't mean he's definitely going to kill. It's if. Maybe he'll be Robin Hood, and he'll swoop in, right? And all the swords will miss each other, right? And he'll jump out, and he'll be okay. That's Reish Lakish. Maybe he's Robin Hood. But he's willing to do that. In fact, the implication of the Agos Mamunius is that he felt he was obligated to do it. And if we posit like Reish Lakish, doesn't it Siv, that's the mucker for this idea that you're obligated to risk your life in order to save somebody else. Do you posit this way? Do you posit this way? So the Hamek Shela assumes, and the Siv assumes, that Rav Chaigon, the Shiltos, does pass in this way. Furthermore, Yair Bachrach was one of the great Achronim of about 400 years ago or so, in Amsterdam, in Germany. So Rav Yair Bachrach in the Shuvas Chavos Yoyer also passing this way. And he says that this is what emerges from the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Why? Because there, if only you drink yourself, that's only if you're certain that by sharing, you'll both die. The Gemara says, if you both drink, then you'll both die. That's obvious that you're going to kill yourself, and no one has to commit suicide to save another person's life. But, he says, the Gemara is leaving open the fact that if it's only a maybe, he says, then even Rabbi Akiva would have admitted that you both should drink, and hopefully you'll both be saved.
Wouldn't it depend on how you define the nature of the suffix? Level of risk percentage.
How do you decide that? Yeah, we're going to try to get to that. Yes, presumably yes, but he doesn't mention that point. Furthermore, I saw right before I came, or before the previous meeting, before I came, in the Sefer Nefesh Harav, which is Rav Schechter's, so to speak, intellectual biography of Rav Soloveitchik, so he quotes here not only a psak, but a maisa from Rav Chaim Brisker. On the Shaila, imutar la'odom lahachnis es atmo b'sotek sakana, that's our case. Can you put yourself at risk in order to save someone who's definitely at risk? He quotes other Makaros who discuss this. There was a case. I don't even know how to pronounce. There was a problem. That's one issue. Then he gets to a second question. There was a cholera epidemic. It's a contagious disease. Etc. Even those who are still healthy, they are obligated to help out those who are already infected. Even though they are putting themselves at risk. Because he's not putting himself in definite risk. Maybe he'll contract it. And even if he'll contract it, maybe he'll be okay. Let's just call that one suffix. But the point is that he's only machnas with suffix sakana.
That was a
teamwork. He doesn't seem to mention that point, that the whole world is going to, or whole seaboard is going to be, even individuals, one-on-one. You just take the one-on-one cases. Do I have to help worry about this guy? So apparently Reb Chaim Paskin, as the Chavos Yoyer does, like this Kabbalah slip. And not only are you allowed, you're obligated if you can save the person. If you can't do anything about it, so, you know, better get out of the way and let the doctors help, so to speak, as the saying goes. Right? Not everyone has to all of a sudden think that they're a doctor. But if you can help, even if though you're putting yourself at risk, you're obligated, according to this group of poskim, to do so, even though you're putting yourself at risk to save somebody else.
The Gemara statement, the Baye Horeg Vayav, or Masum Kesef, why is my blood any...
So exactly, but that's only... That's why you don't have to do it if it's a Vadai. But if it's only a Suffolk, so you're not putting yourself definitely at risk. You're not putting yourself definitely at risk. It's only a zero-sum game if you're definitely putting yourself at risk. Do you have to die in order to save somebody else's life? Now, the case of a tzibur, which is really the weighty question, is, you know, do you have to die in order to save lots of people? Or something like that. I mean, these are major shiloh. I mean, these are brain twisters. I mean, this is, you have to, like, be a complete obtuse person not to be completely compelled by just the questions. Who knows what the answers are?
Yeah, but
these are massive questions.
But that's the case for you. It's, for example, if they tell you, we're going to kill the whole town unless you send out one person.
No, that's a question. That's a question on us. Can we sacrifice the person? But what about that guy?
Me himself.
Yeah, can he say, I'm going to go?
This famous Gemara, where you have the two Linus and...
I'm not saying that these aren't... The point is, these are major discussions. Lahavdil, the great philosopher of the ages, discuss these things. And, of course, Achaval discuss these things. But I'm saying, these are like... The questions don't get bigger than these. The questions don't get bigger than these.
I just asked about the cholera. And they go in and they help with cholera. So, you don't even know that you're saving someone's life there. Maybe it's just giving them comfort...
I don't know. Obviously, I don't know the details of the case. But obviously, it was such. And again, Rav Chaim was not a doctor. That's a chiddush. So you're saying this goes even further, perhaps. Because even...
To save someone drowning or burning in a fire.
So let's say, for argument's sake, that there are doctors. But, you know, if you don't have someone who's going to carry the person to the hospital or something, the doctors can't reach them. You know, like on the battlefront or something. Or there's only so many doctors in the MASH unit. So how many people you need people to get to be endangered, to go bring the people back from the front? So maybe those are the kind of things that Rav Chaim was doing, so to speak. I don't know. I just know what it mentions there. So this is the first school of thought. However, there are those who disagree. And their disagreement is grounded in compelling absence of information. Namely, the Sma and others point out, this is all fine and good, it's the Constantine version of this source and this Yerushalmi. None of the major Rishonim quote this Lahalacha, not the Tur, not the Rambam. And if you look in Shulchan Aruch, neither of Yosef Karo or the Ramah, nobody quotes this. I don't say it's not true, it's not even discussed. No one passes that you have to do such a thing. And in such a case, silence, presumably, is indicative of the fact that they don't hold of this. Why? What about this Yerushalmi? There's a Yerushalmi now. So there's two approaches. One, some group of Achronim say, well, in the Yerushalmi itself, remember, Reish Lakish is the heroic figure in that Gemara. But he was the only one, right? There was another Tana who said, no, I'm not getting anywhere near this case. Presumably, maybe we pass him like that Tana. And secondly, even if the Yerushalmi does say, yes, you're obligated to risk your life, as these folks can say, who said the Talmud Babli, the Babylonian Talmud, who said they agree? Well, how do you know that they don't agree? So there's two suggestions that the Achronim give for Gemaras, which they claim may be rayas that the Gemara, in our Gemara, the Babli, disagrees. For example, the Gemara in Maseches Nida tells the following fascinating story, that there were these people who there was a rumor about that they were murderers, and they were running away from the authorities who were trying to catch them, and they wanted to hide in Rabbi Tarfon's house. And Rabbi Tarfon did not let them stay. That's the Gemara. The question is, why not? Why did Rabbi Tarfon want them to stay? So if you take a look at Tosfos says, based on another source, that if he's hiding them, what's going to happen if the authorities knock on the door and find them under the bed? Not only are they going to get killed, the Tarfon is going to get killed. So you see, Sandy's group of Aharon, that this Gemara, based on Rabbi Tarfon, is assuming, you don't have to put yourself at risk in order to Vadai save these people, because you yourself would be at risk. That's one group of Aharon. Now, other Aharon say that you can't bring a proof from that Gemara, because that Gemara is making a very profound, but different point. And there are poskim, including Rashi and others, who seem to look at Gemara differently, namely, that Rabbi Tarfon thought they were guilty. And the halacha is, whether it be Jew or non-Jew, it is prohibited to harbor a murderer. It's a mitzvah. Turn him into the authorities. A murderer? That's not where these Masira things come in. He's a murderer. He endangers non-Jews and Jews. There was a case not that long ago where there was a Nebuch, before it became even more controversial, what you'll call, if you will, Nebuch, an Israeli or a Jewish terrorist, who did some wild things 15, 20 years ago or so, and they couldn't find him for years. He was basically being harbored by Jews in America. And they knew it. It was a horrible Chilul Hashem. So according to some Rishonim learning of this Gemara, it was usher, absolutely usher, to harbor a murderer. But they say, had Rabbi Tarfon thought that they were innocent, then he would have hit them even at his own risk. So depending on how you learn that Gemara, it may or may not correspond with the Yerushalmi. But that's one possible divergent approach. A second Gemara that's quoted, it's in Maseches Nida Daf Samach Aleph. The second Gemara that's quoted is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. That's talking about, again, we referred to it before the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is talking about how much you have to exert yourself, how much you have to do, perhaps how much money even, Louis, you might have to spend in order to save a person's life. Everything you have to do. But if you take a look at that Gemara in Rashi, there's one thing that the Gemara never says you have to do. It's not mentioned. It never says in the Gemara there, which is talking about how much you have to do to save someone's life, it never says you have to put yourself at risk. And the Netziv suggests, perhaps, that that's a Gemara which seems to argue on the Yerushalmi and holds that you're not obligated to risk your life in order to save somebody. The Netziv goes further, and I forget this fellow's name who walked out before, but according to the Netziv, at least, he was reading the Gemara correctly. Even the Netziv suggests that perhaps this is at the heart of the Machlokas, Rabbi Kiva ben Petura. That's really what they were arguing about in the Gemara that we started with. Namely, he says the following. The simple understanding of ben Petura can't be true. It can't be true that ben Petura is of the position that two people should essentially commit suicide. That's crazy. What does it mean, he says? It means that ben Petura held that they should share the water because that'll buy them an extra day or two. And maybe in that day or two, they'll be saved. They'll come across a town, as the Gemara says. You know, the helicopter will fly to Gilligan's Island and we'll find them finally. Somehow they're going to be found and somehow they're going to be saved. And if not today, but maybe we'll buy ourselves more time. So even ben Petura is only talking about a case of, I'll share the water, I'm putting myself at risk, no doubt, but it's not that I'm vadai committing suicide. Hopefully, we'll be saved. Hopefully, we'll be saved. So it's a suffix. And that's the opinion of this Yerushalmi and others. That's their ben Petura approach. Rabbi Akiva, when he says no, is essentially saying, no, you, definitively securing your own safety comes before risking your life in order to maybe save somebody else. So it could be, says the Netziv, that our whole question is not necessarily a question of Bavli versus Yerushalmi. It may very well be at the heart of this very famous debate in our Gemara that we started with. Either way, bottom line is, you have a machlokes, whether you want to call it Bavli Yerushalmi within the Bavli, you have a machlokes, it seems to be of early sources, and when it comes to the poskim, so you have this group, which now includes perhaps anecdotally Reb Chaim Brisker, and you definitely have the Chavos Yoyer and the Hagos Mamunios, who hold that you do have to risk your life in order to save somebody else, because you have others, the Sma and some others who seem to say the Netziv himself, others seem to say no. From other sources, it seems to indicate you're not obligated. Now, it's worth noting, before we try to find some middle positions, perhaps, it's worth noting that at this point, we have this machlokes. On the one hand, do you possibly think Yerushalmi and you're obligated, or are you not obligated? But the question is, even if you're not obligated, which seems to be a majority approach, after all, as the Sma says, the Rambam doesn't quote it, the Torah doesn't quote it, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote it, the Rambam doesn't quote it, but are you allowed to do it? Even, again, it's worth noting, no matter what happens, you'll leave tonight, there are a minority group of folks who say you're obligated to do it. Obligated. But that does seem to be a minority. The question is, in the majority, are you allowed, or perhaps you're prohibited from risking your life in order to save another person's life? So here we come to the Radvaz. The Radvaz has two significant tshuvas. The Radvaz, of course, was the chief rabbi in Egypt. And the Radvaz has a tshuva in which he discusses this, and he's talking about very graphic cases of giving up your limb. A person's going blind, and Nebuch will be in danger. Can they gouge out your eye? Again, you can imagine what the technology was like in his day. Or another limb, they'll amputate your limb and somehow sew it on to him. Can you give up a body part in order to save another person's life? So he says, if it's going to be not necessarily risking your life, You're still not obligated to do it, but at least you'd be allowed. We don't ever obligate someone to do something so extreme as amputate their own limb. But at least you'd be allowed if that's all it'll be, so you'll continue without the limb. But if, the Radvaz says, you'll be putting yourself in danger, either because the surgery itself is risky, certainly in those days, even in our day, or because life without limb X or Y is a dangerous proposition, says the Radvaz, you're a chassid shota, you're a fool. What kind of person gives up, risks their life for somebody else? Not like the running back. The Radvaz says, you're a fool. You're a fool. You should not do it. Very, very harsh comment. The Chacham Sofer, in his comments in the Gemara, seems to say that maybe the rise in the Gemara gets the Chacham Sofer, and he comes up with this creative distinction which I don't really appreciate. It says it depends, really, it seems like the risk of the procedure. If it's Al Yedei Cherek, they're going to take a sword or a knife and cut off a limb, so he says, well, that's very dangerous. That's what the Chacham Sofer said. You got to be crazy. The Radvaz meant, what are you, crazy? Of course you don't have to do it. But he says, if it'll be Al Yedei Sam, some kind of a drug. Now, I'm not sure what kind of a drug makes your limb fall off, so I'm not exactly sure what he means, but the way I read it, and I'm happy to let anyone else take a crack at it, it's... I thought that he's driving the point that maybe the procedure is a little bit less risky. And in certain cases, he says, well, that's where maybe you'd be allowed. But again, the Radvaz seems to be our first step into a whole other world here of physicians, which seems to be not only you're not obligated, maybe you shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be doing this. The Aruch HaShulchan and the Pischei Tshuva as well try to hedge. And they say, listen, it's true you're not obligated, that's the majority position. But they don't go necessarily so far as the Chas of the Radvaz. They say, listen, don't be so machmir on this halacha that you don't have to. Don't be so cautious. You know, you'll ask me, how do you draw the line? I don't know. But don't be too cautious and too safe. And then, ominously, they say, if you'll be too cautious, maybe the day will come where you'll need a limb. You'll need someone to save you. And someone else will say, I'm going to be too cautious, and I'm not going to save you. So even though they don't say you're obligated, even in this little gray area, you have the Radvaz saying you're a fool to doing it, and others saying, you know what? Maybe you're not be a fool. Maybe you're just being a mensch. It's a very... those two people are arguing, so to speak, if you will, in the middle. So now let's discuss very specifically a modern-day example. We'll mention one or two others, but mainly one, which seems to be very much dependent on these background sources. And this is the question of, I want to discuss, of kidney transplants. There are a whole host of reasons why someone might need a kidney transplant. And the godless is that we got two, we can live with one. In theory, you can have live donor kidney transplants. Medical technology is doing a good job with this kind of stuff. And presumably, hopefully, you're not going to need your one kidney, and hopefully it'll work, and you'll be on drugs that you should reject the kidney, the one who receives it, the recipient. And hopefully everyone will both live, the donor and the recipient. The risks here are obviously twofold. Number one, the procedure itself is a major, significant invasive surgery. As with all major, significant invasive surgeries, there's no question the surgery itself is on some level a risk of life. And number two is, now you're down to one kidney. What if something goes wrong with your one kidney? There's no question that you're putting yourself much more at risk, which happens to be why they are very strenuous in their screening practices for who they... Not everyone's even allowed to donate a kidney. If you're, again, I'm not a bucky in exactly the details, but if you're in certain risk categories, they won't allow you. I may have told this story in other contexts, but I knew somebody who needed a lung transplant, and until they could get a full lung, which only happens after someone with brain dead, but they can buy some time with what they call partial lung transplants. So leave aside the ethical issues of, because they don't want people selling off their limbs, so in the entire civilized world, only family members are allowed to do this. They don't want this coming up on eBay, people selling a note of their lung and things like that. There's major ethical issues. But beyond that, there's very strenuous rules for who's even allowed, even within the family, to make even a partial. You don't need every one of these little notes on your lung. Anyone who's even, if you have any, depending on your height and other risk categories. So for example, you should just know, parenthetically, this is not my topic, but I would never miss an opportunity to drill this home. If you've ever smoked a cigarette, you're out. This isn't like some crusade. This is like, they have no agenda other than this is what the science tells them. Right? You should just know, and don't shoot the messenger. Certainly don't make me smoke a cigarette. In Eretz Yisrael, and to the rest of the world, if you ever learned for a significant period of time in a Haredi yeshiva, even if you never in your life smoked a cigarette, you're puzzled from donating. Because the secondhand smoke is so dangerous. I kid you not. And this has nothing to do with anti-Haredi bias. It has nothing to do with anything like that. It's just a fact. Their yeshivas are not. Yeah, there's no question. There's no question. Yeah. Yeah, no, that is a major cultural divide. A major cultural divide. Secular Israelis still smoke, we know. To a large extent, unfortunately, the Haredi still smoke in Israel. That middle category does not. As a general rule, I don't mean individuals. Of course, individuals smoke. But the idea of having yeshiva where there's not much a cloud of smoke. So that's just an agam. Not my topic, but I can't miss an opportunity to just remind everyone how evil and how terrible smoking is. Mamash asur daraisa. So what about the kidney transplants? So Diane Weiss, from Manchester after the war, and then he moved to Israel. He was the head of the Eda Haredis. Diane Weiss has a tshuva in Minchas Yitzchak Yevam Siman Kuf Gimel, where based on the Radvaz, he prohibits kidney transplants. Because after all, the donor is risking his life, or her life, and therefore, you're not allowed to do it. That is Diane Weiss's tshuva. You should just know, by the way, parenthetically, I haven't seen this inside, but I saw it quoted in a journal, that Rabbi Meiselman, many of you may have been his Talmidim, or some of you may have been his Talmidim, Rabbi Meiselman in a journal called Halacha U'Refuah, Volume 2, held that it's not so pasha that it's mutter to be the recipient of a kidney transplant, because the procedure is dangerous. Who said you'll have to put yourself under the knife? So Rabbi Meiselman concludes, just, Mar Mokama Nilacha, nothing more. And Rabbi Meiselman says, it depends. What's your prognosis without the kidney transplant? If you could spend the rest of your life living what would ever be a normal lifespan, but never you're going to be on dialysis. So he holds, and just to have a more comfortable life, usher to have the surgery. But if they think, no, not just the quality, but the length of your life will be increased if you'll have the surgery, then he says it's mutter to be the recipient. That's mamash chumra. He says, forget the giving. You're not even allowed to receive. But I don't think the minhag is like this, Rabbi Meiselman Psak, but it's just worth knowing that it's out there on the books.
Is he saying that you're not allowed to receive because you're not allowed to take it to somebody else, or he's that the risk of the surgery?
He's not talking about lifnei iver. That's another point. But he's talking about it's a risk for yourself.
Okay.
It sits Eliezer as a number of tshuvas. I'll mention a few of them tonight, but only a few minutes left. But the Tzitz Eliezer basically discusses in Chelek Yud, has a tshuva where he discusses in Chelek Tes. Also, the Tzitz Eliezer discusses this, and essentially, basically, based on this Mincha Tzitzel, he says two things. First of all, he says, given that we know that there's a chance that even if you go through everything, the recipient's body will unfortunately reject the donated organ. So since there's no question, you can never say about a kidney transplant, that if I'll do this, I'll definitely save him. How do you know you'll definitely save him? Maybe his body won't accept the kidney. So therefore, he says, it's poshut that you're not obligated to be a kidney donor. And then he goes further, based on the Radvaz, and he says, it's usur to be, based on the Radvaz, like in the Tzitzlok, it's usur to be a kidney donor. However, in a second tshuva, again, he has a number of tshuvas, he then goes further and he says, well, he's talked to doctors, and doctors tell him how dangerous it is, but he says, if you'll have a whole group, not just one, I don't know how many he needs, if a group of reliable doctors will tell you that it'll definitely, whatever that means, I'm putting it in quotes, definitely safe to be a donor, then he thinks it would be permissible. Again, not obligatory, he's not holding like Yerushalmi, but then he thinks it might be permissible. If you have a group of doctors that tell you it's definitely permissible, but he leaves, that's like a footnote at the end of the tshuva. The basic thrust of the tshuva is, like the Minchas Yitzchak, it's usur to be a donor. Comes along the Rav Avi Yosef in the tshuva in Yechaveh Das. He quotes some of these Machamirim and he says, Yechaveh Das does not have dates on his tshuvas. I don't remember what the Tzitzel Ezer's date is, but usually his tshuvas have dates. Yechaveh Das does not have dates. But let's argue they say that it was a later tshuva. It sounds like it. He says, nowadays, doctors tell him that kidney transplants, as dangerous as they are in theory, 99% it's not a fatal thing. I'm sure, God forbid, Nebuch, Shalom 100 times, somebody might have died out of complications, but the numbers are infinitesimally low. Infinitesimally low. So therefore, Rav Avadi Yosef says, essentially, we are in that status. We're in that position where it is a safe procedure. He doesn't say he's obligated to do it, but Rav Avadi Yosef ends his tshuva, that it's certainly permissible to do it, and it's a mitzvah to do it, because, again, it's essentially not a risk to you, and it is definitely a maybe, and hopefully maybe even a probable, if you're a good donor, to be a savior of somebody else's life. Furthermore, he points out, and this gets to Ellie's point of figuring out how do you decide what's acceptable risk and not. So he points out, the Radvaz is the big machmir, he calls you a chassid shota. I won't get into all the details, but there's a second tshuva of the Radvaz. A second tshuva of the Radvaz, where there he says that even the cases that the Rambam was talking about, remember the cases of the Rambam? The lion's chasing the guy, or he's drowning in the river. So what did the Gemara Rambam say? You have to save him, if not you're over on Losam al Damriacha. It's true the Rambam never explicitly said you have to risk your life to save someone else, but says the Radvaz in the Tshuva, it's implicit that you're risking your life in those cases. Every example that the Rambam gave, it's not like you just get to push a button, you get to send a guy a pill, you're risking your life to save somebody. And yet, that's the halacha, Losam al Damriacha. So that second Radvaz seems to say that you are chayiv to risk your life. How do you resolve the two apparently contradictory sources? So Rav Avadi Yosef says it's in a tshuva that I also saw in the volume of works called Nishmas Avram by Professor Abraham Abraham, which probably came out before that tshuva, because he writes there that Rabbi Maran Rishon Lezion Rav Avadi Yosef told me. So at least in the current edition I have, he didn't yet footnote that it's also in Yechav Adas. That is that Rav Avadi Yosef made the following suggestion. He said that's the issue. It depends on what the risk is. If the risks are overwhelmingly dangerous for the savior, jumping in the river, whatever the particular surgery would be, then the Ravaz may hold, it's a terrible thing, you shouldn't do it. And Ravaz Yosef even suggests that if it's a Safek HaShokul, it's a 50-50 chance, that's too dangerous according to this approach. But if the overwhelming likelihood is that it's not a risk to you, then he wants to say that even the Ravaz would also suggest it's good. And with all that information, and with the doctors telling me about kidney transplants, that Ravaz Yosef concludes that, again, he doesn't think it's obligatory. We're not going that as far as that first group of sources we saw, but definitely permissible, says Rav Avadi Yosef. He thinks, again, the Tzitzit is still alive, so you can't say he would say. And to the best of my knowledge, Tzitzit hasn't yet said. But it sounds like according to the Tzitzit has his own rules, it should be okay. And certainly he suggests, even according to the Radvaz, who is the basis of the Machmirim, if you try to put together the two Radvazes, says Rav Avadi Yosef, it should become out that it's permissible. Rav Moshe has a tshuva. I didn't have a chance to look this inside, but a lot of the poskim quote this tshuva. I don't know offhand. Actually, if you'll pull one off the shelf for me, I'll see if I can quickly figure it out for you. Yoredei Chelik Beis, where I don't know off the context. I don't know the context of the tshuva, and I would like to know if we could. But there, Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says that while it's true that you're not obligated to risk your life for somebody else, Rav Moshe is quoted by many poskim unequivocally that you are permitted to do so. Against the Sicilyezer, the first one, against the Radvaz. Again, there's a middle approach that you may not be obligated, but you're also not prohibited. You're definitely allowed. Let me see if I can quickly find it. Yoredei Beis, Kuf, Ayin, Dalet, just so we should know the context. If I can figure it out quickly, I'll tell it to you. Kuf, Ayin, Dalet. Look at this. It's a Tshuva to Ayin Weiss. To tell the case. Ubedover im yesh chiyuv echad lachtoch evaro b'shvil hatzalas nefesh al chavero. And the argument is, do we hold like the Radvaz or not? So I don't know what he means by cut off a limb. Maybe that, he doesn't quote a case of surgery, but taking out a kidney might be called cutting off a limb. Or does he mean some case like the earlier Achronim spoke about, that somehow what we call an amputation may somehow save another person's life. I'm not sure, but in that case, Rav Moshe concludes, like Rav Avadi Yosef, basically, that it is mutter to do it, even if it's not obligatory. I just want to close by mentioning two other things, because kidney transplants is the main thing I want to talk about, but there's other examples where even the Sitz Eliezer has leaning opinions. It really makes me very fascinated. Number one, he has two different types of opinions. Another parallel question would be, putting yourself as someone who would be involved in experimentation. Are you allowed to be a test subject? He doesn't give the context, but are you allowed to, if that'll involve risks to life. So, the Sicilyezer, Kedarko, says it's usher. If there'll be a danger, but if the doctors tell you it's a safe medical experiment, then it's permissible and perhaps even a mitzvah. Again, there you have the Sicilyezer saying, if it'll be safe, just like he said, if all the doctors tell you the kidney transplant is safe, it's okay. And a final issue, which was, I think, alluded to before, which is a larger question, and it has been asked in the cholera epidemic. Every time Nebuch, there's a new machla in the world, poskim have to discuss this. It was most recently discussed by contemporary poskim in light of AIDS, which is the question of the obligation of doctors to be involved when there are communicable diseases. So in the cholera epidemic, whenever these things come up, the post can have Nebuch to deal with this. So the Tzitz Eliezer has two tshuvas, and others do as well. I'm not doing justice to this topic. It's a topic in its own right. But it's obviously a related topic. He's putting himself in danger. potentially, or to save somebody else. Our question. And here, the Tzitzel himself has a long tshuva, where he, two tshuvas actually, where he says it's different. It's not exactly clear to me, because I was reading it very fast, exactly what his distinction is. He basically says it's different than donating a kidney, or it's different than donating another limb. The doctors, he say, it's definitely mutter to do so. He doesn't go so far as to say it's an obligation, but he says not only is it mutter, but in the second tshuva he says it may even be a mitzvah. So the Tzitzel Yezer himself, who is one of the machmirim on the kidney transplants, even he holds that a doctor would not be, even though he's putting himself at risk, maybe you'll say the risks are lower. It's not, yes, more work needs to be done to fine-tune that position. But even he has escape clauses, if you will, both on the kidney transplant question itself, as well as on some of these other related questions. The bottom line that emerges from all of this is that really have the range of positions exist. A minority opinion seems to say it's obligatory to do it. Again, the heavyweights in that minority. Majority seems to say you're not obligated. And within that, the larger group, you have split into two camps. Those who say you really shouldn't do it because you're putting yourself at risk, and others, including Rav Avi Yosef and Moshe Feinstein and perhaps others, who would say that you definitely are allowed to do so. Of course, the bracha that we should all have is that the needs for these shilas being resolved should be macha, Hashem Dima, should not exist, and then we won't have to worry about such shilas. A good Shabbos to everyone.